The opinions expressed during this program are solely those of the host and guests. They do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, management, staff, or advertisers of WMGQ Magic 98.3.
This is an encore presentation of At Central Jersey. Welcome to At Central Jersey with Maggie Glynn on Magic 98.3. It's been called the state bird, and it can make life miserable. We're talking, of course, about the mosquito. Joining us is the superintendent of the Middlesex County Mosquito Extermination Commission. That's Deepak Matata. Thank you so much for being part of At Central Jersey.
Thank you very much, Maggie.
Now,
thank you for having me on.
Oh, I'm so glad you could come on, because I really want to talk about this. You know, West Nile virus is in the news, and a few other diseases that we're being told you must pay attention to. And Middlesex County has this extermination commission and has been looking out for us in mosquitoes for a very long time. Can you tell us a little bit about the commission and your history?
The commission came into place in 1914. In fact, we actually celebrated our 100th year. And the primary mission of the commission is to actually make sure that people enjoy their life in terms of their outdoor life so that it's not affected by nuisance mosquitoes. And the second important thing is also to minimize the threat from any emerging diseases, or just like the West Nile virus.
Right. And we'll talk about that. But to be so many years in Middlesex County, that's a pretty amazing history to be looking out for the mosquitoes for such a long time. So I guess this history with New Jersey and mosquitoes goes back very far.
Yes, it does too. Yes.
All right. So tell us a little bit about what you are trying to eradicate. If you could just tell us a little bit about West Nile, and what are some of the other emerging diseases that you're seeing that we have to pay attention to at this point?
Mainly in New Jersey, we are focusing our efforts on, when we talk about disease surveillance, we talk about West Nile virus, and there are other diseases too, like you just spoke about, Maggie. There are the Eastern equine encephalitis, then there's also St. Louis encephalitis, and there are newer diseases that last year we had a very, very high attendance, you know, observation from everywhere was the dengue virus and the chikungunya viruses, which are the new emerging diseases, and those are something of public concern for some states in the southern U.S., but nevertheless, so we have to be having a proactive approach to looking at these diseases.
Now, are we having an issue with those diseases, too, in New Jersey, dengue fever?
No, not in New Jersey. No, not definitely in Florida. There has been cases of locally transmitted diseases of dengue and chikungunya, but not in New Jersey, and especially in Middlesex, we do not have any of those concerns.
All right, but we do have at this point, or I think, I don't know, is it this time of year for West Nile virus? Because I'm seeing more and more around New Jersey reported cases of that. Is this in August when this starts to happen, or is this when we're just seeing them being reported?
That's correct, yeah. This is about the time when West Nile virus is very common, and I want to say this is very common in the mosquitoes right now. Like, you know, it kind of picks up, and just to give you a little background on it, it is the virus is usually circulated in the birds and in the mosquitoes and the birds, and it so happens, and then there are certain mosquitoes that will bite the birds and also the humans. That's when the incidence of West Nile virus will start seeing in humans.
And that's so that's
right
how
now,
it all begins.
Right now, the incidence, what we are seeing is the mosquitoes are, number of mosquito cases are popping everywhere, which is very common for during this time of the year.
Right. So, now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry. So far in New Jersey, in Middlesex itself, we have about, like when we call positive mosquito pools, about 28 cases of mosquito positive cases.
All right. Now, let's talk a little bit about that, the mosquito pools, and the work that you do at the Middlesex County Mosquito Extermination Commission. Very proactive. Are you going out knowing where these spots are and treating this? Big history here.
Yes. The commission actually has a very robust surveillance program, right? So both for nuisance and diseases. So what we do is continuously we trap for mosquitoes and we monitor the populations and especially the vectors of West Nile virus mosquitoes like the Culex pipiens and Culex restuans. when we have enough of these, when we track throughout the county, and then we send these samples out to the state lab for testing. And that's when we will know the incidence of whether there is positive mosquitoes in the county. And what requires after that is a series of control measures that the commission then employs to see that these mosquitoes are under check and does not affect the residents in Middlesex County.
And let's talk about those measures and what happens. What could people expect? What do you do behind the scenes that we really don't know about? Or maybe we'll see a little thing that says, you know, spraying today, spraying this week. What are some of the things that you do to keep this under control?
So once we hear that there is positive mosquitoes based on our, you know, surveillance and the extensive data, what happens is the inspectors, we know some of these areas, which what we call the habitats that are out there that can breed these mosquito species, especially the common house mosquitoes I just mentioned about the Culex species.
Right.
So those habitats, we go in and survey them again and then treat them with any required pesticides that's there to control them. And these are all and I can talk more on what kind of pesticides we use to control them.
Yes, and I would like that because I think people should know what they should do if they see pesticides or how they know that there are pesticides being applied in their communities.
Correct. So to go back on what the commission does is then we also let people know and do our extensive notification in that area. So if we are coming around to spray for adult mosquitoes, see, it's the adult mosquitoes, it's the which are the ones which will bite humans and transmit these diseases. You want to keep a check on them. So what we do is we notify the local area where the incidence is, and then come and spray for mosquitoes.
All right. And what can people do in their own backyards to keep this under control? Or do you have some advice for them? What should we be doing in our own properties? And what should we be looking for to tell you about if we see something?
That's an excellent question. So people can really make a big difference here, too, and in partnership with working with the commission. What we usually advise people is to really, there are mosquitoes that are right in your yard, you know, it's like they're breeding habitats, what we call, so mosquito-producing sources. So the key thing for people to know is if there is standing water and it's stagnant for more than 7 days, you will have mosquitoes coming out of it. So it's very important. The mosquitoes need, especially the mature mosquitoes, need these water for their development. So any standing water, if you are able to eliminate in your backyard, that will actually bring down the populations really, really low, and then you can actually enjoy your backyard. And then there are other few things also we advise people, you know, like when we say standing water, it could be your pools, your bird baths, the tires, you know,
right,
gutters, wheelbarrows, the kiddie pools. Sometimes people leave water, and these can actually produce a lot of mosquitoes.
And 7 days really can make a difference then.
Yes, the life cycle is very quick, and especially when the temperatures are really hot like this, the development of mosquitoes from egg to adult takes very quickly. And we, you know, the three things that we usually tell them, people, we call it the three D's of protecting yourself from mosquitoes.
Yes, rest, tell us, please, so we could be outside.
The three D's would be like the drain, dress, and defend. So drain all the water that's standing, you know, and clean up. Like I just went through the whole thing. So make sure there's no standing water. And then if you really have to be outside, then dress in loose-fitting clothing and light-colored. And mosquitoes are, you know, there are studies that show that mosquitoes are attracted to dark-colored clothing. So wear light-colored clothing and also loose-fitting clothing. And also use repellents. You know, when you have to be outside, and use the EPA or the Environmental Protection Agency, you know, they have certified repellents that you can use when you're outside. And make sure when you use this, you follow certain the label directions on these repellents, and that should give you to enjoy your backyard.
So you can go outside again. Now, before we leave you, is there a website or anything that people could go on to learn more about this and how to protect themselves or how to get in contact with you or to see where spraying's going on?
So, yes, I mean, if you have mosquito problems, yes, please do reach out in Middlesex County, please. And every county has a mosquito control agency. Please reach out to your agency. And here in Middlesex, the number is 732-549-0665. And if there's standing water, you can also reach out to us to let us know that that's there, and we can come and take a look at why it's causing those things. And in terms of website, you can always go and look for reporting service requests. I mean, you can go on to our commission's website on Middlesex County, too.
All right. Deepak Mithada, the commission superintendent of the Middlesex County Mosquito Extermination Commission. Thank you so much for being part of At Central Jersey.
Thank you very much, Maggie.
You're listening to At Central Jersey with Maggie Glynn on Magic 98.3. Zika virus has been in the news a lot lately. How will it affect us in the Garden State? And joining me to talk about this, I'm very happy that she could come to the microphones with us. It's Dr. Tina Tan from the New Jersey Department of Health. We're going to talk about Zika virus and what it means for New Jersey. Dr. Tan, it's in the news now and it's in Brazil. Let's start first with, what is Zika virus?
Zika virus is a viral infection that's spread by the bite of an infected mosquito. And what we've been seeing right now is that we've been seeing spread of this virus right now in certain countries in Central America, South America, as well as in the Caribbean. But outbreaks typically have occurred worldwide in tropical Africa and Southeast Asia. And back in May of 2015 was when Brazil started reporting their first outbreak of Zika virus in the Americas.
Right. Now, Zika virus has been around for a long time, but recently I noticed, and I'm not exactly sure of how important this is, so maybe if you could fill us in. Recently, January of this year, CDC activated its Emergency Operations Center to respond from outbreaks of Zika. That sounds very important.
Well, this particular viral infection, for most people who do get infected with this virus, don't have any sort of symptoms, or if they do, they usually don't get sick enough to go to the hospital and tend to get better on their own. But the reason why we're concerned right now is primarily associated with pregnant women, because we found that there is a link between a serious birth defect called microcephaly and a Zika virus infection. So this particular population of pregnant women is of particular concern for public health officials right now.
And let's talk about that, because we've seen pictures in the news. We've seen mainly of what's been going on. Mainly the focus has been on Brazil, but this is a very serious illness for infants, microcephaly.
Right. Again, the vast majority of people who do get infected with Zika virus don't have any sort of symptoms or have very self-limited illnesses in general.
Right.
But we are concerned about women who are pregnant who run the possibility of transmitting the virus to their unborn babies. And there has been shown a link between this virus and birth defects, including this microcephaly, which basically is a condition. It's a birth defect that's characterized by a smaller head than expected.
Now, in New Jersey, not mosquito season yet. We're looking going down the line because we do know many years ago, the mosquito was the state bird. So we need to really, really look at this. So what does this mean for New Jersey coming down the line? Are we concerned about it? Should we be very concerned about it?
Well, right now, fortunately, we do not have any transmission of Zika virus in the continental United States. But that said, we're a very global community just in general, and we always have a lot of people in New Jersey who travel elsewhere outside of New Jersey and outside of the United States. So that's why, we really want to encourage New Jersey residents to stay informed about Zika virus by checking the State Health Department's website as well as the CDC website, because right now the situation with where Zika is impacting various areas as the world is evolving and constantly changing. Every single day, we're seeing new countries that are being added to the Zika-impacted areas. So that's why, we encourage people to make sure that they keep up to date on travel advisories, and not just for Zika, but also for other travel-associated infections, too, because people have to be mindful that there are other infections that are carried by mosquitoes, such as malaria and dengue, which there actually are some preventive steps that people can take. Additionally, it's really important to remind everybody that here in New Jersey, we have a longstanding history of mosquito-borne illnesses such as West Nile virus, such as eastern equine encephalitis. So we do have a long tradition here in New Jersey of, you know, really strong vector control activities that are led by our state Department of Environmental Protection and the local mosquito agencies. But, you know, it's also important that we remind people that, you know, when we hit mosquito season here in New Jersey, particularly related to mosquito illnesses that are found here in our state, that, you know, they take precautions to protect themselves against mosquito bites to prevent against some of these mosquito-borne illnesses. So again, you know, making sure that people wear insect repellent and follow the directions, as well as to try to minimize places where mosquitoes can breed by, you know, making sure that, you know, you check your yards and remove areas where water can collect, because those are the areas where mosquitoes can breed.
Right. And we actually have done an interview with the Mosquito Commission from Middlesex County, which I'll probably play again, just to go over all of those things of how important it is for everyone to, you know, take care of their own areas to keep the mosquito population under control. Now, there are some people in New Jersey who have Zika virus, right? But that was from traveling.
Right.
Do we know how many people at this point? How do you keep an eye on it? Where is that at right now?
Right. To date, we have 9 travel-associated cases. And, you know, we have been working closely with our healthcare providers throughout the state, as well as local health departments throughout this, the state, to do surveillance for possible travel-associated cases. And, you know, we routinely send out updates to our public health and healthcare stakeholders to make sure that they're up to date on the situation and to encourage them to report any sort of suspect reports that are out there. And in addition, our state health department has done a lot as far as outreach to healthcare providers throughout the state and has a lot of different initiatives right now to make sure that we get the message out.
Now, I would guess because it is a mosquito-borne illness and it doesn't really affect right now in New Jersey, but coming down the line into mosquito season, people who are diagnosed with Zika have to be really careful not to get bitten by a mosquito, I'm guessing, to pass it on to the rest of us.
Right. You know, when we do identify individuals with Zika virus infection, and if we're in the middle of a mosquito season, that, you know, we will be encouraging people to ensure that they try to avoid mosquito bites. So, you know, that will include, you know, staying indoors for about 2 or 3 weeks after they're diagnosed with the infection, as well as to also wear insect repellent as well.
So it really is important from, I'm guessing, you know, the public health perspective to educate people about if they might not be so symptomatic, but to be very careful that they are not bitten while they have Zika virus.
That's right.
Now, let's talk about men and women. I found this very interesting that it can stay in with a male, mainly in semen, for much longer, it seems, what the research shows now, than in a woman. Can you explain that?
So right now, there is evidence that suggests that Zika virus can be transmitted through sexual transmission. And so, you know, the important thing is that it's always important that people practice protective measures, making sure that they use a condom correctly every time. What we do know is that Zika virus can be spread during sex by a man who's infected with Zika to his female or male partners. But there's still a lot of things that we do not know that is in the process of being identified is, you know, how long the virus can stay in the semen of men who have had Zika. And we also don't know if a woman can spread Zika virus to her sex partner. So again, these are all questions that are still being looked at this time.
Now, is there any sort of vaccine at this point? Are they researching vaccines? Where does that stand?
Unfortunately, right now, there is no vaccine for Zika virus, but we do know that there's a lot of effort right now underway to try to develop something.
And are there any other effects? It seems the main population here, pregnant women, are at risk. Are there other people at risk with maybe issues with their immune system, or how does that play out in the rest of the population?
Well, right now, the information about Zika is still evolving, but, you know, there have been reports of a disorder called Guillain-Barré syndrome that has been potentially associated with infection with Zika virus. But again, this is something that's still being looked at right now.
And people who are, I would say, not in New Jersey right now, this probably doesn't pertain to us, it may down the line, but people who are in Brazil and in countries where this is an issue right now, physicians are really telling women who are thinking about being pregnant to discuss this with their physicians.
Yes. In general, we recommend that anybody who has concerns about their health or about Zika virus in general, about their potential risk, that they really contact their physicians and have a discussion about their particular risk factors, their particular concerns, and about their particular situation. Because, again, every individual is a little bit different, has different health concerns, and that's why it's important to have those discussions with your healthcare provider.
Now, what would you say if people want to get more information on this, want to know some more facts about it? Can you tell them where they can go from the state to get some of these details?
The information about Zika virus is always changing and evolving, so we encourage people to keep up to date by visiting our website, our state health department's website, which is nj.gov/health. Or otherwise visit the CDC website at cdc.gov. And that should provide more information about, for example, travel advisories, because, again, these change from day to day. And we are getting more information every single day about the clinical characteristics and the types of illnesses that we're identifying among people who are getting infected with Zika virus.
Well, Dr. Tina Tan from the New Jersey Department of Health, thank you so much for being part of At Central Jersey.
Thank you, Maggie.
You're listening to At Central Jersey with Maggie Glynn on Magic 98.3. Joining me is Cindy Steiner. She's the executive director of the New Jersey Bike and Walk Coalition, and we're talking about how dangerous it is to walk and cycle in New Jersey and what you can do about it. And Cindy, thanks for being part of the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Maggie. A pleasure to be here.
Now, biking and walking, I know, is not a very easy adventure in New Jersey. It that can actually be dangerous. Now, is that why your coalition started to address some of the difficulties for bikers and walkers in the Garden State?
Yes, the coalition started in 2009, and they formed specifically to address a piece of legislation that we really would like to see pass. It's called a safe passing law. Many people know it as a 3-foot law. And what that does is require vehicles to give pedestrians and bicyclists 3 feet of space when they pass them on the roadway. And that is actually a start towards making our roads safer. And we're still working on that legislation. New Jersey has still not yet passed it. So that's one of our campaigns. But in general, we work on policy and funding, so that towns can do things like education and infrastructure to make their roads safer for bicyclists and pedestrians.
Now, Cindy, how did that come about, the 3 feet law? I'm guessing that, you know, that is the buffer for pedestrians and for cyclists. And what made, I'm guessing, legislatures around the United States decide to do that? And how many states have passed it?
There are 25 states and the District of Columbia that have passed a safe passing law, and the majority of them have a 3-foot law. Pennsylvania has a 4-foot law, and since they're an adjoining state and that was passed in February 2012, New Jersey is pursuing a 4-foot safe passing law at this point. But these safe passing laws started back in the mid-2000s. And we recognize that the bicycling community, you know, nationwide recognized that that this would be one way to protect bicyclists on the road. And we are interested in a much broader bill that also covers pedestrians. And we use the term vulnerable road users. So that's anybody who has a legal right to use the roadway who's not in a motorized vehicle. And that's bicyclists and pedestrians. And pedestrians covers a very broad spectrum of road users, of people. And it's so more than half the country has a safe passing law, and New Jersey is the only state in the Northeast that does not have a safe passing law of any kind. So we see it as critical to making our roads safer, or I guess I should say as a start to making our roads safer. There's much more that's needed, but this is really a good first step.
So your group, the New Jersey Bike and Walk Coalition, it sounds like you really do act like a watchdog for the public.
It's a watchdog organization, and it's also we provide resources to towns when they seek to do this type of work. Many communities want to do these types of improvements, but they're not sure how to get started. So we can point them in the right direction, point them to resources that are both public and private. And kind of guide them through the process and show them how it's done. Because we're working in communities that, in various steps of doing that, various stages, we can sort of cross-share that knowledge because of the position that we're in. And you do start to see communities kind of, in a sort of friendly competition with each other. We hear about this town doing it. We want to do that also. And we can really facilitate those connections.
Well, I think you've piqued some folks' interest who are listening to this and thinking, I'm a biker, I'm a walker, and I want my town to feel that way. I want them to say, okay, I want to be in competition. How do people get involved and say, yes, I want change, and I want change in my community, and I want someone to listen? Because some communities are turning a deaf ear, or they're just doing kind of a Band-Aid with all this.
What some of the first things that need to happen is start speaking up at your town council meetings during public comment periods and talking about a personal incident that you had in your town where perhaps it was a close call, or God forbid it was actually a crash, or you know somebody, and ask the town council what they're doing. And then from that, you start to find other people in your community, other advocates, other residents who are also interested, and you start to form a group. And then going from there, you can formalize into an advisory committee. Montclair has done one. West Orange is working on one. Verona. Princeton has one. These are groups of made up of the various stakeholders, both from the township and from the private citizens, who together come up with solutions and work to get them implemented. Another resource that we actually produce the New Jersey Bike and Walk Summit every year, and that's a day-long conference of how do I do this in my community, from safe routes to school, to alternative transportation projects, to research, tools, education, different sessions on projects that have happened already, projects that are underway. Plus, we bring in national level speakers. It's open to everybody in the state. And most of the people there come with the question, how do I get started in my community? And this is a way of showcasing what's going on around the state so that, folks can come and learn and go back to their communities and say, we want this here. We need this here. It's part of, our right as a citizen of the state to have roads that are safe for us to bike and walk on.
And Cindy, are the resources available online after these conferences every year for folks who can't make it to see, what went on and how they could resource that information?
Yes, we do provide many of the slide presentations that are given. We also, our program is available. Plus, we can point, people get in touch with us, we can point to some of the resources that were discussed at the session or at the conference. There's a lot both nationally and in New Jersey that people can use to learn about this.
Now, when you see things in your community and you go before, you talk with your council, mm-hmm. and you try to get things done,
right.
Through all these communities, how much does enforcement play into this, crosswalk enforcement and things like that? That seems to be lacking in a lot of communities in New Jersey.
Yeah, and that's always a budget issue. There's only so many police officers that can go around, and we certainly understand that. We also endorse educating. Many of these committees that we're talking about will launch education campaigns that basically assist the police in what they're trying to do. And, I live here in Montclair, and so, of course, I spend a lot of time here, but I also get around the state. And you can definitely see, community by community, there's a big difference in the culture of that community. In many communities, you do see crosswalk law honored very well. In other communities, it's virtually ignored. And that is definitely a combination of education and enforcement.
But you know what? But I think the bottom line, Cindy, what you're saying, you have to get involved. I mean, I think that's really what it comes down to. If this is important to folks, they need to get involved.
That's right, because your town councils aren't necessarily going to do this on their own. They're going to listen to their residents, and they're going to pay attention to those who are asking for what matters. That's who they're going to pay attention to. And you need to make this front and center for them.
And have them pay attention to it. And Cindy Steiner, the Executive Director of the New Jersey Bike and Walk Coalition, thank you so much for joining me on At Central Jersey. Missed a show? Listen online or download episodes at magic983.com.